to Slightly Offsides, your perfect game plan for all things college and professional football. Hosted by Dre and Mike.
All right, welcome to Slightly Offsides, episode 4 here. Dre and Mike, we're going to take you guys through a crazy bowl season. Dre, what do you think about this bowl season?
Man, it was a fun weekend. Everything looked very shaken up to a certain degree, and we also got some very obvious ones. I think that, you know, I shouldn't say obvious, but, you know, they were favored and they came out and they did their job. And I think it was overall a great bowl season.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think a lot of the games, we're going to touch on this in a little bit, but a lot of the games were kind of hampered by some stars being out, right? The big sit outs that occurred this year. But I think far and away, we had some crazy games, especially in the early windows, right? The SEC faltered in a lot of its early games, especially to non-Power 5 schools, right? You saw Missouri lose to Army. You saw Auburn lose to Houston, a game that we actually both predicted. That was a really fun game to watch. And it really seems like, I guess, kind of the first takeaway for me, at least for bowl season, is the SEC, right? It's starting to show that it's more of like a 2 or 3 team league. And I kind of want to get your take on this, but that's my takeaway from it. I just think that, you know, you have Alabama, you have Georgia, and it's not to take anything away from those two teams, because obviously those teams were probably the most complete two teams this year and deservedly are playing for a national championship because of that. But, you know, when you start looking at the depth of the conference, I think you start comparing the SEC to other conferences like the Big 12, the Big 10. I think, you know, you take a sixth best team from the SEC versus sixth best team against the Big 10 or something, I think the Big 10 probably wins. And that's kind of the games that we saw this year. You saw Tennessee and Purdue. You saw some other games like Maryland took on Virginia Tech. Okay, so stuff like that. So, Dre, what do you think about the SEC kind of faltering in the early window?
I think it's an interesting, you know, way for them to be headed towards. I don't think that they're necessarily falling behind in any sort of way. I think that's more so of, you know, this year in terms of bowl seasons, we watched Baylor beat out Ole Miss, who lost their star quarterback, Matt Corral. You can look at the fact that Kentucky's been trying to get a little bit better here, and they've even had a pretty solid recruiting class. Texas A&M is going to be looking good here in the next few years. I don't think it's necessarily one or two teams, but I think that when we talk about college football playoff, who's going to, you know, run the entire conference, I think it is pretty much one or two teams. I mean, if we're going to talk about large one versus two type of deal, yeah, there's only two teams.
Yeah, and I guess kind of bounce off of that before we go into some of these New Year's Six bowls, right? If we're being critical of the SEC, I think we should also be pretty critical of the Big Ten, right? Big Ten, kind of the opposite story, right? It's a really deep conference, but this year there wasn't really that figurehead like there usually is. Ohio State faltered in a couple of big games, and then Michigan showed us in what seems to be, at least in my opinion, a little bit of a more shocking result now against Columbus, right? When they beat Ohio State in Ann Arbor, everybody was really high on that team. They followed it up with a blowout win of Iowa. And so everybody was really excited to see how they would handle themselves on the national stage. And they went out and probably pitched one of the biggest duds of the year, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a fair statement there. At the end of the day, I think that if you look at the Big Ten as an overall conference, they progressed in terms of, you know, keeping up with the SEC over the past, I don't know, three decades here. And I don't see anything changing about that. I think, again, this has been an interesting year for football, and the past 2 years have been interesting years for football. One with COVID, two. This year we've had a lot of different changes, and even last year we had some changes to some of the rule books and who can do what as draft day comes around, who can get paid what, and all of that jazz. So it's just been an interesting year, and watching players, you know, take the field and sometimes not take the field based upon whether it's, you know, money reasons or whether it's COVID or injury, things like that. I think that's played a large factor into this one.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good analysis. And I think that's kind of a really good bridge for us to start talking about some of these New Year's Six Bowls, right? We won't go through all of them, but I just kind of want to touch on, I'll talk about the start of, I guess, the one I thought was the most upsetting to watch. And that was probably the last one we had, which was the Sugar Bowl. You know, and we'll touch on this in a little bit more when we get into the bowl game sit-outs and stuff, right? But Matt Corral was a guy who stood up on the top of the mountain and said, you know, hey, this is the number one quarterback in the draft. Right now, Mel Kiper says he's the number one quarterback in the draft. And he said, you know what? I'm not going to sit out. I'm going to play in the Sugar Bowl. I want to play for Ole Miss one more time. He goes out with a horrific knee injury right in the first quarter. Or leg injury, I'm sorry. They did just, I don't know if you saw this today, they did say that x-rays came back negative. So, you know, the big bad news is kind of averted there. But it looked really gruesome and it was really sad. And for me, that kind of just took all the energy out of that game.
Yeah. Yeah. And it did. And you can tell just by how the rest of the game played out. Baylor ended up, you know, I guess I wouldn't even call it torching Ole Miss. They only won by two touchdowns, you know, and it just looked a little bit more of a half effort game after that point. Everybody was a little bit, you know, astonished when Corral went down, and it showed later on throughout the entire game. And that's no fault to Ole Miss. I think that's, you know, it's reasonable. It's fair. And nobody, I don't think anybody would have expected, you know, everybody's like, oh, they're all sitting out. But then there's the one kid that actually gets hurt. So it makes sense.
So I think we go from the most upsetting, the most, I'd say underwhelming game to probably one of the most exciting ones. I would argue this was the most exciting New Year's Six Bowl. I definitely want to bring this one up to you because you were critical of your own Cowboys heading into this game. And I just want to get your take on how, you know, the Fiesta Bowl went.
I think it went well. Oklahoma State started off slow, as usual. You know, it didn't baffle me to any degree. After watching enough games this season, they typically have that half start, and then they come in at halftime, and then they just start to reel it back in. And I think it kind of showed the defense really tightened up there in the second half, and they really just showed why they were, you know, still a good football team this season, despite being ranked a lot lower probably than they could have been even with that second loss to Baylor. And it was overall, it was a good game. Spencer Sanders played a good game. Cone on Notre Dame, great first half, man. I'll tell you, like I said, you had this kid had me worried, thought it was pretty much, you know, over by maybe the end of the first half. I watched the score that touchdown before the end of the first half, and I was like, oh, this is going to be rough. But it was a great win by Oklahoma State. Great coaching from Mike Gundy, doing defense and head coaching there, because, you know, we're all over the place at the current moment. But we're getting everything adjusted. And I heard that we got two people that are already in-house up there doing the work on the defensive side of coordination. So sounds like we're in good hands so far.
Yeah, you mentioned quarterback play. I mean, both the quarterbacks played absolutely phenomenal. I'm looking at the stats right now, and I just want to say this is probably the highest I've ever seen Notre Dame score, at least off the top of my mind, in the last, like, 5-10 years in, like, a big-time game, right? I'm blanking on the final score of the Clemson game a couple of years ago or last year, but other than that score, I mean, this is the most I've seen them put up in, like, a big-time matchup. And I'm a Big Ten guy, right? So when you say Jack Cohn, I think Wisconsin, right? He was at Wisconsin for like 4 years. Right. I'm looking at the stats right now. Jack Cohn attempted 68 passes. He threw for 509 yards, 5 touchdowns, 1 pick. I mean, from my Big Ten experience, just watching that specific type of Jack Cohn play with Wisconsin, anytime you ask that guy to throw the ball 68 times, I mean, you can't be expecting to win the game, right? They were able to keep it close, and he certainly looked phenomenal in the first half, but you kind of just got that sense, right? In the first half, he was playing within himself. He was comfortable. He was hitting his, you know, short to medium routes, right? And then taking the occasional long, you know, available touchdown passes when they were there, but for the most part, staying within himself. I think in the second half, he got a little too timid. He got a little too, flustered with himself, right? Because Oklahoma State really started to extend that pressure on him, and it took away some of those checkdowns. And so he started to force things. He started to throw the ball away too much, try to make too many plays, and it really suffered in the second half. But let's talk about Spencer Sanders, because you and I coming into this game, right? We both said, we both harped on this, which Spencer Sanders were we going to get? And that was going to be the difference for Oklahoma State, whether they were going to win or lose. Spencer Sanders pitched probably one of his best games of the year. I mean, the yep. dude was lights out. 371 through the air, 4 touchdowns, and add a 125 on the ground with him. I mean, the dude did everything he needed to. He reduced turnovers, no turnovers. I mean, it was incredible.
Yeah, it was a complete flip. And that's, we talked about this. It's like having a light switch. If he's on, he's bright. You know what I'm saying? If he's on, he's pretty damn good. If he's off, he's off, you know, and he'll throw 2 to 3 to 4 interceptions in a game where you'll just watch it and be like, is this really happening? And this is where you kind of watch him and you see why this was a 4-star coming out of high school, and why he was such a great pickup for Mike Gundy and the Cowboys. I think it just displays a little bit more of what he's been capable of in comparison to even the Oklahoma game, where I believe he threw two interceptions, and then Baylor he threw 4. And that was 6 in 2 weeks. So, and that may have been just equaling out, not too shy of, you know, 2 for 1 on touchdown to pass or touchdown to interception ratio. So he played phenomenal. He played phenomenal.
He did what he needed to do. He got the job done. Absolute electric game. I sat and watched that game start to finish. It was phenomenal. But I would say, you know, from a game where turnovers, because I would say, you know, the Malcolm Rodriguez interception, that was pivotal right there. But I'd say the biggest interception right to cinch a game in New Year's Six was definitely the Michigan State Pitt game. Just absolute heartbreaking for Pitt, right? This was a game that you and I both talked about heading into. We were like, we both made our picks the week before, right? And then both Kenneth Walker and Kenny Pickett said, hey, we're not playing. So now you and I were like, okay, we got to totally reevaluate. We both kind of reevaluated and said Michigan State was going to come out with a victory just because, you know, we didn't really trust the backup for Pitt. And unfortunately, the football gods, unfortunately, the football gods just decided to screw over Pitt even further in that game. I mean, he attempted 5 passes, went down with an injury, so they had their 3rd string. But Michigan State with the pick 6, they sealed it. I mean, it was a good game. Definitely is a living embodiment, though, of this sit-out culture we're starting to see, just sucking the energy out of some of these games. I mean, this was a game where you were going to see 2 Heisman candidates, and it ended up being a 3rd string versus, you know, a pretty unhealthy Michigan State team, right? But they still, especially defensively, but they came out, they played well. It was still a fun game to watch, but lacked the star power that we were expecting.
Yeah, and that's where I think we've caught that in a couple of games. I don't think it made a difference in terms of if you wanted to sit back and watch football on a Saturday, you got some exciting football. But, you know, it was just a little bit different without having some of those massive names in there. But, you know, like I said, it's about the money. You know, get that bag, boys. I'm never going to fault you for getting that bag. So go get that bag.
All right, and then the last one we talk about before we talk about the college football playoff semifinals, the Rose Bowl. I mean, this was probably – I know I said that the Notre Dame-Oklahoma State game was electrifying, but if you wanted to watch offense, you wanted to watch back and forth, you wanted to be on the edge of your seat for the entire game, not just the fourth quarter, the Rose Bowl was your game, man. I mean, I don't know, as an Ohio State fan – I can't remember the last time I've ever seen an Ohio State defense forget to get off the bus like they did in Pasadena for the first half. I mean, they looked like Texas with the missed tackles. They looked like Ohio State versus Oregon and Michigan with the schemes. I mean, it was just pitiful. But they turned it around in the second half. They played well. But all of the talk here has to go to the Buckeye offense. I mean,
yeah,
CJ Stroud, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, I have to pull up the stats. It's just ridiculous. CJ Stroud, 37 of 46, 573 yards, 6 touchdowns, 1 pick. And then Smith-Njigba setting Ohio State, Rose Bowl, and bowl records left and right. I mean, dude was targeted 16 times, caught 15 of those 16 passes for 347 and 3 touchdowns. Arguably could have had a fourth if it wasn't punched out as he was making his way into the 5-yard line.
Yeah.
Just what an immaculate offensive performance from a team where questions were being posed left and right.
Right. Right. And you guys had a few people sitting out this game too. And this is that same thing about, hey, even though we had a few people missing, it was an electrifying weekend for football. It really was. Even with Olave out, you guys had two on the offense side of the ball. And did you have any on the defense? Couple?
Yeah, it was four guys. We had Ohio State was missing Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Nicholas Petit-Frere, and then Haskell Garrett. And then they also had, I read something, the inactivities before the game, there was like 24 total guys that they were missing, due to like season-ending injuries, health issues, opt-outs, declares, blah, blah, blah.
And not to mention that stat that you brought up, what was it earlier about? Was that you? I think it possibly could have been you. I had heard a stat about Ohio State and their recruiting depth chart, the 5-star, 4-star.
Oh, yeah. I told you about that.
I mean, dude, the depth on your roster this year was phenomenal. It's going to be phenomenal next year. You guys always bring in a solid class. And I mean, it really showed even when you're down, you know, quite a few offensive players this go around against Utah. It just was too much. It really was. And you could watch the struggles in the first half. I think you could, you know, pick that apart all you want, but I think it's not about how you start, it's about how you finish. And we watched a really good finish for Ohio State. And that was something that I think we were really begging for against Michigan, hoping that, you know, that finish come out a little bit, something similar to this. But I think it was a good redemption show out for Ohio State.
Yeah, and they were facing a team that made it known they were ready to play. I mean, that was a home game for Utah. They showed up. They had the drip with the uniforms, with the helmets. The boys were ready to play. They were tossing Ohio State around for most of the game. Britton Covey, absolute electrifying. Tavian Thomas, just laying the physicality on the Ohio State linebackers.
That 97-yard house
call. Oh, my God. It was
– second drive, bro?
It was crazy. It was just when Ohio State had just gotten close, right, and you kind of started to feel the momentum. I mean, I don't think Utah could have planned that better. It was right when Ohio State was starting to shift the momentum back, and Utah – just Britton Covey just came out, made an amazing play. It looked like a video game type return. He was just juking people left and right. And then the acceleration, it was what an electrifying game. I think one of the things I took away from watching the New Year's Six and then watching the semis is the lack of electrifying in the semis. And this is something that isn't just happening this year, right? We've seen it multiple years, right? But the Cotton Bowl was definitely the more electrifying out of the two, right? Cincinnati came in. You could tell, at least I could tell just from watching the game. Of course, I was running our Twitter account and live tweeting during the game, right? So I was able to have a lot of fresh thoughts during the game, but it just kind of looked to me like Cincinnati didn't really show up with the aggression. They looked a little bit too timid. They looked like they were trying not to lose, trying not to get blown out. And they weren't really like staying to their true identity against Bama.
Yeah, and I think it's sad because we had talked so much about Cincinnati's defense, and we were really, really trying to, you know, pinpoint the fact that if Cincinnati's defense is what we think they are, they're going to be able to at least keep this close. And it wasn't a bad game for Cincy. It really wasn't. It could have been a lot worse. We could have watched a complete routing, and that wasn't what it was. But I think we just watched, you know, an Alabama team that came out hot, ready to play. Cincy's defense missed a lot of tackles. And Will Anderson made a big, big impact on that defensive side of the ball. He's nasty. He is nasty. Desmond Ridder just had troubles left and right with that kid there. And everybody else on Alabama's line showed up as well. They didn't have any misbeats at all.
Yeah, so no, I think what you're saying is absolutely true. To me, it just goes back to I don't think Cincinnati showed up with the right game plan. Like, I think there were definitely points where they missed execution, right? There were picks that they dropped. There were passes that they missed, things like that. But just first of all, they played mostly zone for most of the game, especially on third downs. You can't give a quarterback like Bryce Young time with the zone. You need to trust your defensive backs. Blitz him, make him uncomfortable. And you saw during the game that when they actually started doing that, especially in the second half, they were seeing a lot of success with it. So I was shocked that they didn't come out a little bit more aggressive defensively and trust their guys. And then the same thing on offense. I mean, it looked like they almost told Ridder to stay in the pocket for the entire game. I mean, he didn't move. He didn't try to improvise. They didn't really force a balance. Right. It was kind of more once they got behind, they were just trying to pass. And Jerome Ford was having success on the ground. So to me, it just kind of seemed like since he didn't show up with a game plan, Bama did. And they executed it flawlessly. They only had like one or two mistakes, I would say, throughout the game. But it was just that's kind of what it came down for me is execution.
Yeah. And Brian Robinson had a phenomenal showing. I mean, he picked apart. Really, he gave so many options for that Alabama offense throughout the entire game, whether it was him, you know, coming off a nice little bubble or him taking it off of a play action, kind of giving that little, you know, fake handoff. And then Bryce Young busts left and he goes right and then he's gone. It just, you know, it was men against boys to what it certainly looked like. And that's no disrespect to Cincy. Yeah, they're a great football program. I think they just ran into their match. They met their match for the season at, you know, 12-0, and Alabama's just a phenomenal football team. They definitely deserve to be, hate to say it, but they definitely deserve to be where they are. Their stature is so large in college football at this point. They have the Midas touch. No matter where they're going here in the next, you know, few years, they're going to be there. So it's phenomenal what Alabama's done. And I think you're going to see something similar here in the next game that we talk about too.
Yeah, I think that you make a great point there at the end, though, saying that, you know, since he showed that they belonged, right? This was not a game where at the end of the game, you look away and you say, well, at least, okay, some people had this view, but I don't personally think that this is how the game kind of showed to me, right? It didn't really look like Cincinnati didn't deserve to be the fourth best team, right? They showed up again. The execution just wasn't there, but they played with heart. They played, they were excited to play, right? They just looked a little too scared of Bama, scared of the moment, but they were certainly ready in terms of, you know, talent. They deserved to be there. So I think that puts to bed a little bit of the whole, did they deserve it? Did they not? I personally think they do. Especially looking at what happened in the other game, I think you could make a more convincing argument that maybe Michigan didn't deserve it. Although I don't think that there was ever a scenario looking back on it, right? Hindsight's always 20/20, but you couldn't have kept Michigan out based on the way they finished the year. But now looking at it, I don't know really what the problem was.
It was a route, to say the very least. It sounds a little harsh, but you know, there was some garbage points tacked on there at the end. I mean, we're going to be honest. It was 27-3 by the end of the first half. So it was just one of those games where whenever you watch back and you see Michigan play, they look timid against on both sides of the ball, against the Georgia offense and against a Georgia defense. They look timid on both sides of the ball. We didn't watch him score a touchdown until the fourth quarter. you know, Haskins was, you know, ineffective almost to a certain degree. And whenever you're watching them play against a Georgia team that's giving them hell every, you know, play they run the football, it was, to me, it was just one of those games where you kind of questioned, was Michigan number two really overall? Not necessarily at the end of the season when rankings settle out and this is where we got to start looking at, I don't know, the eye test has to be a little bit more important than finishing records, you know,
who's going to
go out there and compete.
I agree with you. I mean,
that's no disrespect to Jim and the entire Michigan program. But
no, I think you make a good point. I think really what we can boil it down to, or at least this is my theory, right? I think what essentially occurred is Michigan goes in, they play a phenomenal game against Ohio State. That's the monkey that they had on their back for the last, you know, two decades, right? They go in, they do it in such convincing, brutal, physical fashion. They absolutely just demoralize the Buckeyes, right? The amount of confidence that builds in a team that already had been leading up to that game feeling so confident, and then to turn around and absolutely just gun down and outmatched Iowa team in the Big Ten championship. You know, then you have 3 weeks where all the media is talking about is Michigan's finally in the playoffs. This could be their year. They beat Ohio State, right? All of these things. It instills such an almost false bravado, right? There's a difference between confidence and arrogance, and it's such a hard line to toe, especially with these young adults playing in college football. And I just think that – I think Michigan came into the game a little too full of themselves, and it showed. Because when they got punched in the mouth early by Georgia, their effort just disappeared. I mean – I remember sitting down again. We were live tweeting this from our Twitter account. Georgia goes down, first drive of the game, scores a touchdown with ease. I mean, Michigan had really no stop for their defensive game plan, right? Mm-hmm. Michigan gets the ball. They get to Georgia's 40-yard line, and it's about 4th-and-3. Okay. Now, if I'm Jim Harbaugh in that situation, right, this, we know how good both of these defenses are, Dre. We know how good both of these defenses are, and we know that they're the strength of both these teams, and the offenses are not as strong as the defenses, right? Why not? And I remember thinking this. I was like, this is where I would probably take a delay game, punt, try to get them inside their five, play field position, keep it a close game. Because if you don't do that, you're giving them the ball at essentially midfield, and – with the amount of defensive lackluster stuff you had on the first drive, right, you barely stopped them. I mean, exactly what happened was what I was afraid was going to happen, which was they were just going to go down, score, and make it a two-possession game. And we also talked when we were previewing this game, it needs to stay close because both of these quarterbacks can't go out and win the game. They can't go out and bring that team back from double digits down. And I feel like Michigan put themselves in that position, and then they just couldn't really, like, come back from it.
Yeah. And it definitely just looked like a, you know, you dig yourself a hole. The further you dig, the harder it is to get out. And that was where Michigan looked at by the beginning of the second half, they looked a little bit gassed on both sides of the ball. You know, it didn't look like they were having any fun being down by that much. They didn't have any energy. They weren't, you know, pumped to be still playing in the semifinal game here. And it's not, like I said, it's hard to take that much of a pounding whenever you're, you know, you've got Stetson Bennett throwing 3 TDs and then 310 yards. Just, you know, it's hard to sit back and take that. And it showed as Michigan continued to progressively get worn out. They were just worn out by the end of the game. We had kind of talked about it with other programs that, you know, they've came around to their peaking point and they look worn out, whether it's injuries, whether it's they've taken a couple bad losses here and there. They lost to a rival. You know, that ego of theirs may have been inflated in the beginning, but like I said, by that end of that first quarter, really, it looked a little bit too far out of reach.
Yeah, no, and to your point, right? You said you start digging yourself a hole; it just keeps getting deeper and deeper. And I think the perfect end of that is at some point you just stop digging, right? And I feel like Michigan stopped digging around like the end of the second quarter. Like they kind of just said, "Yeah, this game just not our best game, and we're not going to come back," kind of thing. And you just saw it show. I mean, you saw cornerbacks losing the ball and seemingly giving up on routes, seeming give up on coverages and stuff. But as bad as Michigan looked, right, you can also compound that by how good Georgia looked. And I think this was a big, like, if you're talking about bounce back games, this is a huge bounce back game for the Georgia defense and Stetson Bennett in particular. Right? He really struggled against Bama. We said coming into this game, which game managing quarterback had to become a playmaker, and he really did it.
Yeah, he really did. Like I said, he was 310 yards, three TDs, 21 for 31 on passing and attempts. He was phenomenal. And overall, like we had mentioned, quarterback play was going to be the deciding factor in this game. And you just watched a phenomenal Stetson Bennett, ladies and gentlemen. You know, he played to his strengths. He made the right plays when the right plays needed to be made. And he really put on a show, almost like you would want to see him do here in this next championship game, which we kind of, you know, lacked to a certain degree in that first go around with Bama, where you kind of wanted to sit back and say, like, well, if Bryce Young was on Georgia, would they have won that football game?
Right.
Changed everything around with quarterback situations. Would they have won that football game? Probably. But you know, you never know. And that's the thing. And you're going to probably get to see here, ladies and gentlemen, who really gets to fight it out here is the last kind of duel. I think it'll be fun to watch Stetson and Bryce Young here go, you know, head to head. Georgia's defense looked amazing and they're going to, you know, be a problem here. And I think maybe this gave them a little bit more confidence. I hope it doesn't give them too much, but It was a good show out for Georgia's defense and Stetson Bennett.
All right, so real quick, before we give our opinions on the rematch, I just have a quick question for you. So put yourself in the shoes of like a Michigan fan or Jim Harbaugh, okay? Like how do you grade this season? Because I think it's such a weird, to me, I was thinking about that. It's so weird to think about this year for Jim Harbaugh and the Wolverines, because on one hand, they vanquished their demons, right? They beat Ohio State. They finally got to hoist the Big Ten championship. On the other end, they just got absolutely embarrassed nationally at a time when everybody was ready for them to make that step forward. I feel like that game against Georgia, it was kind of a one step forward or maybe two steps forward and then two steps back. How do you feel like the state of the program is moving into the off season?
I think it's an interesting, you know, way for things to have played out for Michigan. I think they gained a lot of respect towards the end of the season going into this game, like you had mentioned, and it could have been the reason why their head got chopped off at the end, you know. But overall, I think they have to look at this as a step forward, maybe not two steps forward and two steps back, but two steps forward and one step back. Because I don't know who would have actually expected Michigan to win this entire thing, let alone if they had faced up against what we would have thought if Georgia would have continued to be number one and given that Alabama team another loss, maybe we could have watched a 2-3 Michigan-Alabama game, play something out like that. I don't know. But I see this as a situation where Michigan ends up, you know, taking this as a two step forward, one step back. I don't think they have anything to be sad or down about. I think you guys accomplished more than you probably should have in this year, at least in terms of, you know, you're talking about a Big Ten championship. You're talking about going in and actually getting that call up. Hey, everybody was pissed off at the CFP just 2 years ago. That was in Ann Arbor. So just be happy that you're here. You guys get a chance next year to, you know, come back and do something again if you get there. And it's one hell of a call when you get the call. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. So then real quick, right, because we've got essentially deja vu here, right, with this rematch. So real quick, we don't really have to break it down again because we already did for the SEC championship, but do you think Georgia, in your opinion, I'll just pose this question like this, do you think Georgia did enough against Michigan to change your opinion about whether or not they can beat Bama, or do you think Bama and Saban find a way to beat Kirby Smart in Georgia for, like, you know, the 50,000th time ever?
This is a hard one. This is a hard one because Georgia looked really good. They did. They looked really good, and they looked good on both sides of the ball. Then again, Michigan looked really, you know, you're starting to look at competition and how it goes. And if you just watch the last game between Georgia and Alabama, I think it just has something to do with who's who, more so than talent levels. I think all of these kids are equally as talented at this point. Both teams have phenomenal defenses. I think they may have some differences on the offensive side of the football, but both teams are talented in their own right. I do see Alabama probably still. I'm biting my tongue, but I think Alabama still probably pulls away with this one. This is hard for me to say because I just, you know, like I said, I watched the Georgia team really put out a strong performance against, again, not a snub Michigan team. They should be happy with the season that they had. But Bama just looked so convincing over such a, I don't know, new matchup. It's a foreign matchup. It's something, you know, you don't get prime time for the first half of Cincinnati's damn season. Okay. We're not watching them on prime time. We're watching Alabama on prime time. All right. That's what's happening. So again, this football team that they had to play against was a new challenge for Nick Saban. You know, it's not, I doubt it's the first time they've had to run up against Cincy, and they've lost some players there. They definitely know each other pretty well. But it was something about that convincing win. And it was still a tough challenge. It didn't look like they had given up. Cincy didn't look like they ever gave up, put it like that. It didn't look like a winded Cincy team. So I think Alabama probably still takes this one. Georgia, phenomenal season, but we'll have to see. I think Bama's taking it. Who do you have?
You know, man, it's tough. Again, I think it comes down, I'm going to pull a Spencer Sanders card. I think it comes down to what version of Stetson Bennett we see. I think if we see Stetson Bennett in the SEC championship, who started out nice but then struggled, there's going to be issues for Georgia because, you know, Bama's going to get their points. Their offense is going to score. They showed that they figured out that Georgia defense, which is a magnificent defense. But, you know, Bryce Young, he's going to make his plays. If Alabama can have the balance that they did in the SEC championship, that'll take a lot of pressure off their defense and Bryce Young. I don't know, though. I don't know, because as many times as Saban has beat Georgia and Kirby Smart, I just don't know if a wound this fresh for the Bulldogs with a team this talented. I guess I'll just put it like this. If Georgia's ever going to beat Alabama in a big game, it's going to have to be this game.
No.
It's going to have to be this game.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think if this is the time that they're going to do it in the next 3 or 4 years, honestly, it's going to have to be now. They have a tough task, a tough road ahead of them. Nick Saban set a tone with a dominant run game in their opening drive. You know what I'm saying? They ran 10 times out of the 11. This is, you know, they're a physical football team. And I think that they're going to have a tough task. But I think Georgia is – if they're going to beat them, like you said, if they're going to beat them any time, it's now. Like you said, they lost a close one to Bama early in that SEC game. And I think it was hard for them to, you know, you watch Bama kind of take back what was rightfully theirs and kind of keep it that way. So it's going to be an interesting game here. But Georgia is they're a tough team.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say, Dre, okay, if Georgia's going to win, there's one guy they need to call, and it's Jimbo Fisher, because he's literally the only assistant under Saban that's beaten him. So if I'm Kirby Smart, I'm putting Jimbo Fisher number one on my speed dial for this next week. I'm bringing him to my practices. I don't care if he sees my playbook. Man, change it in the offseason. But if you want to win the national championship, if you want to be the second assistant to do it, you're going to at least – need to pull out some tricks, and Jimbo's the only one who did them successfully. So I feel like you'd want to at least give him a call. But no, I think it's going to be a great game. And let's kind of take this opportunity to touch on something that's near and dear to everybody, right? And it's this whole idea of these bowl sit-outs, right? It became near and dear to everybody because there's some like backlash over ESPN. They said that, you know, this generation of football players just doesn't love football, which was, I think, an absolutely horrendous thing to say. But it really comes down to, and I'll get your opinion on it, right? But it's such a difficult decision for these guys. It's such a difficult decision. And I think one of the solutions to potentially taking this difficult decision and this controversy out of the equation is to expand the playoffs. So I'll leave that prompt there and I'll just let you run with it.
Yeah, I think that could actually, that's a great thought. I think that could actually work. You expand the playoff, you give more people something to play for. It won't guarantee, for example, it won't guarantee everybody, you know, not sitting out. Some people are going to sit out and say, hey, even though we have a national title, I think I still want my cash. And that's okay. Again, like I said earlier in the pod, I'm always going to say, go chase the bag first. Go take care of yourself. Go take care of your family. Go make a career for yourself in the NFL so you're set for the rest of your life. But college football playoff expansion, I think it'll be a phenomenal way to keep players playing. I don't think it has anything to do with the love of football for them. I think it just has to do with what they're playing for. And they have to do pros and cons this year.
Yeah, I mean,
injury, or they're gonna, you know, go play in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it. For a lot of these guys, they've been lacing up cleats since they were like 6 or 7 years old, and ever since they were that age, this was the dream, right, to play in the NFL. And so, like, if there's only one game that stands in between that and the chances that you could have a career-ending injury, let's say, are like 1%, or like even less than 1%. I mean, that's a pretty compelling reason to opt out of that game. You're that, like, imagine, like, kind of like, right, it's like running, for me, the way I look about it is like running a marathon and then like twisting your ankle like 5 feet before the finish line. You know what I mean? Like that's what it would be if you injured yourself in that game. And it's just so demoralizing because you think about, in the analogy, right, you think about how long people prep for marathons, right? These kids have been playing football for that long. And then to see it through all the way until the very end and then be injured, I mean, it would just be heartbreaking. Now, to play devil's advocate, okay, you never go back, right? And Dre, you used to be a basketball player, so I'm sure you can speak on this, right? You never go back and wish you played one less game. You never go back and say, man, I just wish I played one less game for my high school team, or I just wish I played one last game for my college team, right? It's always the other way around. It's always, oh, I wish I played that game. I wish I had one more chance to lace them up with my brothers. And so I can definitely see why people are upset, especially, you know, like some of the teammates, right? Because it kind of seems pretty selfish on the surface level, but I don't know. I just feel like, again, it's a gray area for me. I feel like it depends on the players and how long they've been with the team, right? But I don't know. To me, I lean on the side of, you got to just give them the opportunity to make that decision if they want to, and hope that the culture of the football program is strong enough that they want to still play. But it's such a tough decision.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, you know, we've watched that kind of happen here already, where you get a player that wants to play football regardless of situations here and there, because they feel like they don't want to miss that last game. And it could cost you. It really could. But that's the choice that the player has to make. And I think you're right. It comes down to each player itself. And I also think it depends upon the stakes of which they're being recruited at or touted at for NFL prospect levels. You know, if you're a top 10 pick in the NFL draft, top 20 pick, I probably sit out. You know what I'm saying?
You'd sit out, man. You'd sit out.
Yeah, I'd probably sit out. I'd sit out just because it's like you're at that point, and I don't think I don't think any of your teammates are gonna say, hey, unless it's for a national title game, man. I don't think any of your teammates are gonna look back and say, like, yo, like, it's his fault. that we lost.
Yeah, no, and I don't think that think that's the reason why. Like, I just think, to me, it's just kind of like, I lean on the other side, obviously, right? Like, I've never gotten blindside blocked. Like, I don't know what that feels like. I don't know what it feels like to, you know, get a concussion from a head-on collision with a player. So, like, obviously, you know, I can't speak to it, but I would like to think that, I mean, I'd lace them up. I'd put myself in harm's way if those are truly my brothers on the field, right? But
yeah,
the thing that other people don't understand too, and like people like you and me, especially the people who are kind of like me, who are saying, bro, you just got to lace them up, right? Like, at least I'm kind of like, I get it. It's a tough decision. But for me personally, I'd lace them up. There's some people out there that are like condemning these kids, right? And I think that's so wrong, because aside from everything else that we've already talked about, right? People don't understand that there are other people involved that these kids are also trying to provide for. Like, yeah, you know, a lot of these kids, they're not coming from great, you know, family wealth, right? They're not coming from upper middle class. Some of them are, right? But a lot of kids, football is their path, right? And you see it with like players putting on their family, right? They buy their family a house, they buy their family a car, they buy their family all these things, right? And I just feel like people are so short-sighted that they just think, oh, he's just making that decision because he himself wants to get paid. And I think that that's so wrong, because I think a lot of these kids are also thinking about their families, right? They're thinking about everybody in their circle that's less fortunate. And you see it because they, you know, they buy their parents stuff.
Yeah. And I think it also kind of, it takes away from some of the talent that these kids have. I think if you're watching a kid at your program do special things there, and you know they're not coming back next year anyway. You know what I'm saying? They're not going to come back. There's no chance. This win isn't going to change their thought process on like, oh, I'm coming back. They're leaving. Dude, these kids have another maybe 10, especially running backs, quarterbacks. Some of these kids maybe have another 10 years in their prime before they start hitting a decline in the NFL. Yeah. Like, don't let this be that one game where they get screwed up and they never recover the same way. Because it happens. We've watched players not come back the same way. I think that's my main thing is like, don't short stint a player's career overall. Because that's another, think about that. You get signed for 2 4-year, 5-year deals for $100 million, $200 million, bro. Like, that's, I'm taking that a lot of the times over the, you know, the situation that I'm going to be at in college. And that's just the thing is like, I think it just, fans need to appreciate more what they've done for them in the past 2 to 3 years, if they were there for that long. And for the players that weren't, again, I think it's more so about make your decision wisely. If you can play and you got something to lose, or, your team is already down bad with COVID or whatever, go out there and, you know, you don't even got to try that hard. We had mentioned this with a couple of players. Like, you don't even got to try hard, bro.
Yeah, you just want to be there.
Like, just be there, bro. Like, you know, you don't even got to try hard. Be like, coach, put me in half the reps, dog. Like, put me in half the reps. I'll go hard for half the reps type of deal. Anything like that. But, you know, I don't feel like it's there's people out there that are going insane berserk about it. I think it's just crazy college fans.
Yeah, I think it's downright disrespectful. I think some of these, because here, look, I'll put it to you in a framework that I can personally understand, because I'm a huge Ohio State fan, right? And Chris Olave has, like, for the last 3-4 years has been the lifeblood of like our team, right? Just from just the embodiment of his story, of what he's done for the team, his decision to come back after being a first round pick in last year's draft, losing a national championship and deciding to come back as a senior, right? So I just think it's downright disgraceful for Ohio State fans. And I'm just using Ohio State fans as an example. I'm not targeting Ohio State fans. This is just to work everything about Chris Olave into perspective. But there are some Ohio State fans out there that were really pissed that Olave didn't play in the Rose Bowl. I will say I was one of them who was shocked. I wasn't upset. I was sad because I didn't get to see him play one more time. And I didn't realize that the game I saw prior was the last time I was going to see him. Right. And I think that's also a part for these fans is they don't know, like, oh, if I had known that was the last game, I would have like felt a little bit differently about it. And because I feel cheated out of one more game, I'm pissed about it. But yeah. I just think it's disgraceful to like attack these kids and like question their legacy, right? Say like, oh man, what a great guy, but he didn't play his last game. That's selfish. He must have not been for the team. I mean, in Olave's situation, how could you not have been more for the team? This guy gave up a year in the NFL to come back, pursue a national championship, be a leader on the team, and play an entire season, much less one game. Okay, if he wanted to take off the Rose Bowl, it's sad, but you got to respect it. And for players all across the country, you have to respect it, just like Olave. So I guess that's my final message is just like, if they decide to suit up, good for them. I respect the decision. You see how much it means to them. If they don't, it shouldn't be a strike on their record. It shouldn't be, you know, an asterisk next to their name. You should just realize that, hey, there are other things other than this kid being a college athlete at my university. Okay. There are way more things in play that maybe I need to consider before I go on Twitter and attack him for being a horrible human being who doesn't care about brotherhood.
And that goes for coaching too. Shout out to Jim Knowles.
Yeah, no, and coaches, Dan Lanning did it too. Dan he came Lanning. Back and called yeah. plays against Michigan. And people were pissed at coaches as well. It's not just players, but I agree with you, Dre. That's an excellent point. It's just, if you're a fan base, like you have to handle yourself with maturity. If you want the players to handle themselves with maturity, you have to respect them with maturity.
Yeah.
And too many fan bases this year with the sit-outs, the transfers, the opt-outs, just everything, coaching carousel, have just been way too disrespectful to way too many players and coaches who frankly just didn't deserve it because, you know, they're trying to put their own interests and the interests of those closest to them in front, which is what everybody should do.
Right. Yeah. That's a great point. I think you summed it up perfectly.
That was my colorful rant for the week. We will actually be having a really special guest with us on next episode. We'll be having a special interview episode. So that'll be really cool for you guys to check out. And we have some other really, really cool things coming down the drain as we start to do our seasonal transition into the off season of the NCAA and start to focus a little bit more about these NFL playoffs coming up, Dre, which are going to be really, really fun. So as always, make sure you check out our Twitter. Okay. We have a bunch of really cool things going on there. We're about to upload the results of how our sim did for bowl season. And there'll be a lot of other tidbits going on throughout the NFL playoffs and such. So just make sure you check us out on Twitter at Slight Off Sides. And as always, if you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please make sure to give us a 5-star review, subscribe, and get those likes flowing so that we can keep popping up and changing people's opinions that we haven't met yet. Thank you. We will catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to Slightly Offsides. We'll catch you next time.